Today is Tuesday, July 30th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, the United States and China sit down for more trade talks, but what will it mean for the global economy? And Democratic presidential candidates take to the stage for a second debate. What's at stake?
I think two debate performances in a row that are under par for Joe Biden will become a real problem for him.
And scientists are warning that the most effective drug used to treat malaria is becoming ineffective in some areas. Those stories and a whole lot more are all ahead on today's International Edition. The United States and China began another round of trade negotiations today in Shanghai. Investors are hoping Beijing and Washington will avoid another escalation in tariff, like the ones that occurred after the talks' collapse in May. But officials have downplayed the potential for a breakthrough, since the same issues that caused the talks to bog down earlier still remain. Now, to take a look at how the trade dispute is currently affecting the global economy, I spoke earlier with Joseph Meltzer, Senior Fellow for Global Economy and Development at the Brookings Institution here in Washington. Joshua, I just want to begin really quickly here. The expectations for the talks in Shanghai are pretty low. Given that, what is the implication for the trade dispute between Washington and China and its implications for global trade?
Well, I think we're just waiting to see whether or not these talks can lay the groundwork for any type of forward movement, particularly in terms of what was discussed between President Trump and President Xi at the G20 meeting in Osaka last month, where there was basically an understanding reached that China would purchase more agricultural products from the U.S. and that the U.S. would lessen the sanctions essentially on Huawei. And, there's been no movement on either of those fronts since then. And I think these talks are an attempt to see whether they can sort of make progress on these two kind of key issues, which might pave the way for more substantive talks throughout the year.
Now, you bring that up because the president has already commented today that China has not fulfilled its promises on those agricultural purchases and indicated that if a deal isn't reached, kind of waiting out to see if his first term ends after the next election may not be the wisest course of action. Does that undercut the negotiations that are taking place in Shanghai?
Well, neither side has really moved on this understanding that was reached in Osaka. So the U.S. really hasn't eased up in terms of the way Huawei is, in terms of getting licenses to sell to Huawei while it's on the entity list. The Chinese haven't increased purchases of agriculture. I think certainly there's a broader dynamic at play, which is that the Chinese may well and truly have made the assessment at this point that they're better off slow walking this process now to see not necessarily who wins the 2020 election, but I think they realize that Trump's going to be under increasing pressure the closer we get to 2020 to demonstrate some progress in what he said was always going to be an easy win. And so they realize he's politically exposed, and they're hoping, I think, that the longer they hold out, the more willing he will be to do a deal which is advantageous.
What about the effects on global trade and supply chains as these tariffs continue to remain in effect? I mean, we are looking at a possible rate cut in the United States to stave off any kind of recession here. But what are the larger implications?
I think the big impact currently is just an enormous amount of uncertainty about what U.S.-China trade relationship is going to look like. And so that's certainly, I think, putting a pretty significant dampener on both U.S. investment in China and Chinese investment in the United States. So businesses need to know what the market access is going to be in China. Should they still be investing in China, or should they be investing in other countries? Chinese similarly, I think, feel very nervous about the investment environment for them at the moment in the U.S., and so we're seeing certainly depressed investment in each other's countries.
Joshua Meltzer is a Senior Fellow for Global Economy and Development at the Brookings Institution. Thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure. Thanks.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson is visiting Wales today as part of a national tour intended to reassure Britons that his hard Brexit push won't hurt the economy and rip apart the United Kingdom. VOA's Jeff Custer has that story.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson faces a tough reception from farmers, a group central to the Welsh economy, who fear economic havoc if Britain leaves the European Union without a deal. They say millions of sheep might have to be slaughtered if tariffs are slapped on lamb exports to the EU. The trip follows a visit Monday to Scotland, where Johnson was booed by protesters and warned by First Minister Nicola Sturgeon that his vow to take Britain out of the EU by October 31st, with or without a deal, was dangerous. Johnson, who took office last week, also plans to visit Northern Ireland, the only part of the UK to share a land border with the EU. The status of that border with the Republic of Ireland has become the main stumbling block to a Brexit deal. Jeff Custer, VOA News.
The UN mission in Afghanistan says more Afghan civilians were killed by Afghan and NATO forces than by insurgents in the first half of 2019. AP correspondent Zaria Shackley reports.
The report released says 403 civilians were killed by Afghan forces in the first 6 months of the year and another 314 by international forces, a total of 717. That's compared to 531 killed by the Taliban, an Islamic State affiliate, and other militants during the same period. It said 300 of those killed by militants were directly targeted. The Taliban have been carrying out nearly daily attacks, mainly targeting security forces. I'm Zaria Shakili.
Here are some other stories from around the globe. U.S. President Donald Trump wants to combat forces reduced in Afghanistan by the next U.S. presidential election. Top diplomats from the Asia-Pacific region started gathering Tuesday in the Thai capital to discuss issues of concern in the area, including security on the Korean Peninsula and China's territorial claims in the South China Sea. The Islamic State terror group's self-declared caliphate may be dead, but its leaders are hanging on in Syria and Iraq, dreaming of the day when they can again direct attacks on targets around the world. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and with our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. The Democratic presidential contenders are in Detroit, Michigan, for their second debate. The debates will take place over two nights, tonight and Wednesday. And the first night will feature Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders and Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren among the 10 candidates on stage. Round two takes place on Wednesday and will feature the frontrunner, Joe Biden, along with Senators Kamala Harris and Cory Booker among the 10 on stage. The debates come as a new poll shows former Vice President Joe Biden gaining back his large lead after a poor performance on the first debate. International Edition's Lori London spoke with Mark Rozelle, Dean of the Schar School of Policy and Government at George Mason University. She started the conversation by asking how critical this debate will be for Joe Biden.
I think two debate performances in a row that are under par for Joe Biden will become a real problem for him. He has been able to overcome the first poor debate performance, and everybody understood that he was a little bit, or quite a bit surprised actually, by Kamala Harris's attacks on him and his positions on a number of sensitive issues within the Democratic Party sector. And he's done a lot of work to bring back his support in the African-American community and bring his polling numbers back up. So I think an important point to make here is that the reaction to these debates in the short term can have an immediate impact on the polling numbers of these candidates. But we are 16 months away from Election Day. And as we have seen in the latest iteration of the candidate debates and then the later reactions over time, a candidate can bounce back in the polls after a poor performance in one debate. So I think that's what's happened with Joe Biden. He was caught off guard in the debate. Kamala Harris, I think, pounded him on a number of issues. He looked quite a bit surprised at the time. And the commentary was quite devastating. His numbers predictably dropped. Kamala Harris went up. But over time, there was a lot of discussion and analysis about how these two candidates' policy positions really differed from each other, particularly on the issue she hit Biden the hardest on, which is his past opposition to federal support for busing for racial integration. And as people started to realize that their current policy positions were not altogether that different, Biden started to pick up a little bit in the polls. Harris started to drop a little bit. Candidates can recover from a poor debate performance, but for Biden, the key really is to step up his performance this time, because post-debate commentary will be quite devastating if he has two consecutive poor debate performances in a row.
It'll be interesting to see if another candidate looks to try to take him out by going after him for something that he's not expecting.
The lesson coming out of the Miami debate was attack Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, right? She went after Biden. He didn't respond very effectively. That became the major takeaway from the debate that was played over and over again on the news programs, how she really took it to Biden and caught him off guard, and he ultimately, according to the commentary, had a very poor performance. And so the lesson there, I think, for other Democratic Party candidates is do the same. If you're going to make your mark and get recognized for having a strong debate performance, go after the front runner. Catch the front runner off guard, perhaps. Have that quotable line in there that people will play over and over again, and try to make something out of this very crowded field that separates that person from the rest of the field.
And then we've got on the first night Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, who are apparently very good friends. Their policies are very, very similar. Do you think they will keep it cordial, or do you think that could get tense?
That's a difficult combination, quite frankly, because Sanders and Warren are quite close to each other on a number of issues, and yet each one has an incentive to separate himself or herself from the other and from the rest of the pack. So I don't think playing nice and just agreeing with each other is going to help either candidate. And political observers watching the debates are going to be looking for how either of those two candidates, who are in the upper tier of five or six, seem to be polling much better than the other approximately 15 candidates, perform. And I think that's the matchup that people are going to be looking for the most, since those are the two who are really, you know, in the highest tier of the candidates right now, according to the poll.
Do you expect a lot of people probably to be dropping out of the race after this week, after these debates?
I'm not sure that this set of debates is a do or die for any of the candidates. I won't be surprised if one or two drops out. Performance is seen as simply not adequate. That candidate or a couple of them simply are unable to move the needle in the polls. And that's typically what happens in these large field candidate debates, where everybody's trying to move the needle. And after a couple of debate performances where a candidate's been unable to move up in the polls, the fundraising dries up, the media attention pretty much dies off. And it's just inevitable at that point that the candidate's going to drop out. Way early in the process, I wouldn't be surprised that all the candidates try to stick it out for the next round of debates.
That was Mark Rozelle, Dean of the Schar School of Policy and Government at George Mason University, speaking with our own Lori London. Italy's Interior Minister Matteo Salvini has issued an order that prevents the Bruno Grigoretti from docking at an Italian port until other European Union countries agree to take in migrants the ship has rescued in the Mediterranean. While minors and some needing medical attention have been allowed to disembark, it remains unclear what will happen to those remaining on board. And to get a complete picture of what's taking place, I spoke with reporter Josephine McKenna. What exactly is the condition on board, and how many people do we know are still there?
Well, around 140 migrants who set off from Libya in two dinghies were rescued by fishermen and then taken to Malta. They've been transferred to the Italian Coast Guard ship Bruno Grigoretti, and it's remarkable that the Italian government is not allowing one of its own vessels to dock at an Italian port with these migrants on board.
What is their rationale for not letting this vessel dock?
Well, ever since the coalition government was formed in Italy a year ago, the Italian Interior Minister Matteo Salvini has adopted a very hard line, saying that the Italian ports are closed to migrants, undocumented migrants and asylum seekers, saying that they cannot come to Italy without permission. And he's really been keeping up this very hardline stance. And this is part of that policy. Even though they've allowed 16 teenagers off the vessel and also a pregnant woman and some other migrants who are unwell, there are around 115 on board. And so far, this vessel has not been allowed to dock in Italy while efforts are underway to try and find other European Union countries who may accept them.
You mentioned that this is part of a zero-tolerance policy per se, but what is Italy's responsibility under international norms?
Well, as we know, if the migrants are picked up in Italian waters, Italy has an obligation to allow them to come to Italy. And you would think if they are on an Italian naval vessel, in this case the Bruno Gregoretti, it should be allowed to enter an Italian port. But as I said, this government is really very tough on unwanted migrants and those who have no documents. And because we've seen such an influx in the last few years from Libya in particular, the government is unwilling to moderate this policy unless it gets more support from other European countries. Having said that, we've seen a remarkable fall in migrant arrivals in the last couple of years. 18,000 migrants arrived in the first few months of 2018 up to August, and this year that's fallen 80% to around 3,400 arrivals. So if you're looking at it from a policy perspective, this tough policy appears to be a very successful deterrent. And that's the main thing that this government wants to enforce at this point.
But what about the humanitarian conditions on board the vessel? You mentioned there are roughly 115 people still on board. They aren't allowed to come ashore. What about the conditions that they're having to go through?
Well, there's a great deal of concern from humanitarian organizations and NGOs about the situation on board. It's not good. There have been reported cases of scabies. People are very overcrowded into a very small space on a military ship that is really not equipped for carrying passengers. And don't forget, it's very hot weather at the moment. And just yesterday, Red Cross volunteers brought hygiene kits, clothes and shoes on board while authorities are monitoring the situation and trying to ensure that people don't fall ill.
And that was reporter Josephine McKenna speaking to me from Rome. You're listening to VOA's International Edition.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the largest survey of views on corruption in Africa reveals that more than 50% of citizens across 35 African countries believe corruption is getting worse. An in-depth look at corruption on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Scientists are warning that the most effective drug used to treat malaria is becoming ineffective in parts of Southeast Asia, and unless rapid action is taken, could lead to a global health emergency.
Writing in the Lancet Journal, researchers from Thailand's Mahidol University and Britain's Oxford University say parasites that carry malaria are developing resistance to a key drug combination across multiple regions of Cambodia, Laos, Thailand, and Vietnam. Henry Ridgewell has more.
The most effective drug used to treat malaria is becoming ineffective in parts of Southeast Asia, and unless rapid action is taken, it could lead to a global health emergency, warned scientists. Writing in the Lancet Journal, researchers from Thailand's Mahidol University and Britain's Oxford University say parasites that carry malaria are developing resistance to a key drug combination across multiple regions of Cambodia, Laos, Thailand and Vietnam, Henry Ridgewell reports. The report warns that the parasite Plasmodium falciparum, which causes the most lethal form of human malaria, is becoming resistant to the first-choice drug, DHA piperaquine, in parts of Southeast Asia, with patients seeing a failure rate of 50% or more. The situation is so critical that scientists say the treatment should not be used in Cambodia, Vietnam, and northeast Thailand because it is ineffective and contributes to increased malaria transmission. New treatments must be considered, says Sturgios Mostios of the University of Northumbria.
It might be opportune at this point in time to explore whether or not we should bring together different new classes of medications so that when the problem starts becoming more substantial, there is a solution, potentially, that works at a multi-drug level.
The report says urgent action is now needed to eliminate falciparum malaria from the region. Otherwise, the resistant strains of the parasite could further spread to other parts of Asia and Africa, potentially causing a global health emergency.
All it takes is a ship with infected individuals or a pool of water where the mosquitoes are getting into Africa, and then slowly that parasite establishing a foothold. The likely scenario, however, will be that improvement of healthcare on a day-to-day basis in Africa will create the opportunity for the parasite to evolve resistance.
Currently, malaria vaccine trials are underway in several African countries, but drug combinations like DHA piperaquine remain vital in treating malaria, especially in countries with poor health systems. Since 2014, global progress against malaria has stalled. There were an estimated 219 million cases and 435,000 related deaths in 2017, most of them children under the age of five in sub-Saharan Africa. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Hundreds of Hong Kong protesters around Kwai Chung Police Station, where dozens of other protesters who were arrested during Sunday's clashes are being held. This is after protesters blocked train services during the morning rush hour, causing commuter chaos in the latest anti-government campaign to roil the former British colony. What started 3 months ago as rallies against an extradition bill that would have allowed people in Hong Kong to be sent to mainland China for trial has evolved into a wider backlash against the city's government and its political masters in Beijing. Protests have occurred almost daily, sometimes with little notice, disrupting businesses, piling pressure on the city's beleaguered government, and stretching its police force, which some have accused of using excessive force. And before I go, we'll take a quick look back in time. It was on this day in 1619, the first representative assembly in America convened in the city of Jamestown in the Virginia colony. And in 1942, President Franklin D. Roosevelt signed a bill creating a women's auxiliary agency in the Navy known as the Women Accepted for Volunteer Emergency Service, or the WAVES for short. Plus, in 1975, former Teamsters Union President Jimmy Hoffa disappeared in suburban Detroit. Although presumed dead, his remains have never been found. And with that, that'll do it for me today. On behalf of our director, Nadia Taha, engineer Thomas Blondet, and managing editor, Kate Pound Dawson, thank you so much for joining us. Now for pictures, videos, stories, and more, be sure to follow VOA on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, if you download our mobile application, put it on your tablet, your mobile phone, or elsewhere, you can take our stories with you anytime, day or night. Now, until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a terrific Tuesday.